It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. We've just heard from Secretary Clinton about her energy, environment, and climate plans. So for more insight into both her priorities and how she would try to get things done, we turn to economist Joseph Aldi, a veteran of the Obama White House. He now teaches public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Welcome back to Living on Earth, Joe.
Steve, it's a pleasure to be here.
So what are the key elements of Secretary Clinton's climate and energy platform?
Well, I think the first thing is the fact that she recognizes climate change is a serious threat, that it's important that we bring resources to deal with the risk posed by climate change, to make our economy more resilient to the threats posed by climate change, to make investments in clean energy that will both create jobs, promote manufacturing, but also deliver the power and the fuels that allow our economy to continue to run, but have less of an adverse impact on the global climate.
So, can you briefly describe her 10-year clean energy challenge and how she gets this done without Congress helping her?
Well, I think what she's trying to do is to say we've learned in a variety of policy contexts in the past that the states can be really powerful laboratories, that there's a kind of ingenuity at the state and local level. And by creating this opportunity to fund resources to the states, we can sort of leverage that ingenuity and that learning to figure out what policies and what programs are most effective at promoting investment in clean energy, at promoting investment, say, in transmission that will enable an even greater increase in our renewable power generating capacity, to try to break some of the deadlocks that keep us from really pushing the energy system forward. I think a challenge for her, though, in doing this is that to say you want to produce $60 billion for the states, you have to work with Congress because they hold the purse strings. They'll have to make the appropriations. And so I think what she will need to do if she is inaugurated and enters into office is to figure out the most effective way to engage with Congress to deliver those monies, and it may be even part of a larger infrastructure investment program.
Now, there's a saying that if you want to get something done as president, you better do it in the first 100 days, and the rest is sort of a mop-up operation. So if you were advising her on her plans, what should she do right away should she win the White House?
Well, I think the key thing is first to establish very clearly as president what her goals are. And she's already laid those out in the campaign. She's laid those out in terms of wanting to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by up to 30% by 2025, an even more ambitious goal than President Obama. I think she needs to lay out then what she can do under existing statutory authorities to deliver on that goal. She's indicated that she will continue to defend the Clean Power Plan that President Obama has advanced to deal with carbon pollution in the power sector. There will be the opportunity to review fuel economy standards in the first year of the administration. I think she should lay out clearly what she expects to do with fuel economy standards through 2025 and even beyond. So I think part of it is to lay out your executive authorities and what you expect to achieve for those. But also I think she'll need to figure out what she wants to do and needs to do through work with Congress. Some of that will be on appropriations, whether it's for the clean energy challenge to the states, whether supporting more innovation through ARPA-E, maybe making investments to make our infrastructure more resilient. But I think there's also going to be a question of whether or not there is a potential play for more longer-term comprehensive climate legislation that would help deliver on the long-term goals she's established, such as lowering our emissions more than 80% by the year 2050.
And so how does she do this, Joe?
Carefully. I think part of this is a question about where Congress will be. There's a lot of uncertainty about the composition of Congress as we approach the election. I think there's a question of what's the right policy tool and how one navigates the politics for that. And I think that there is this opportunity because there's an interest in tax reform on both sides of the aisle that you might be able to incorporate some kind of climate policy and tax reform. Now, I'm an economist. These are the kinds of things economists dream about. But I think that there's this potential that you could look at, say, putting a price on carbon through tax reform as a way to finance meaningful reductions in the tax rates that individuals pay. You could engage some Republicans by, say, we'll also cut some of the tax rates on corporate income. So it might be part of sort of a grand tax reform that could benefit both sides of the aisle could claim victory. And you might be able to do something meaningful on climate change as a part of that.
So we're unlikely to hear the word tax from Secretary Clinton's lips during the campaign, but I think what you're telling me is if she really wants to get something done over the long term, she's going to have to use that word tax once she's in office.
Well, I think that the tools at the president's disposal now can make some meaningful reductions in our emissions over the next decade or so. But if we're really going to transform the energy foundation of the American economy, if we're really going to drive the kind of innovation that we need so that we have a breadth of low carbon and zero carbon technologies and equipment and capital that we can deploy to get to the very long term. I mean, the scientists say that eventually we have to go to zero emissions, that if we're really going to be successful in combating climate change in the United States and around the world, we have to go to zero emissions. I think in order to do that, we need a long-term policy signal, a long-term policy framework, and the kind of patchwork that you can use through existing statutory authorities, the Clean Air Act to go after power plants and vehicles, or to do through the Department of Energy appliance efficiency standards. These all make a contribution, but I don't think they're nearly as effective in reducing emissions or driving innovation as a long-term price signal.
So what do you anticipate a President Hillary Clinton would build upon that the Obama administration has done, and where does her platform diverge from Mr. Obama's approach?
Right. So part of it is to recognize that Secretary Clinton was a partner with President Obama on the international negotiations on climate. And when one looks at her goals, it's really taking the path that President Obama has laid, sort of a foundation, and ramping up the ambition. So she's called for a more ambitious goal by 2025 for the U.S. She's talked about defending the Clean Power Plan that is still working its way through the courts. To be honest, one of the most important things she might be able to do on the Clean Power Plan is in the nomination of the 9th Supreme Court Justice.
One of the knocks on Hillary Clinton by some advocates in the environmental community is that she seems to be very friendly to hydraulic fracturing to produce natural gas, something that some see as a real problem. What's your take on her approach to fracking?
I think she recognizes that if we prudently develop the resource, it can deliver important climate benefits as a displacement for coal in the power sector, really important public health benefits. When we think about the effects of burning coal on premature mortality, on asthma, on chronic bronchitis, so that if we're able to address the concerns about how producing natural gas through hydraulic fracturing can impact local water supplies or may create so-called fugitive methane emissions that we'd want to capture, if we have the right regulatory framework to address those environmental concerns, on net, natural gas is a winner both for the climate and for public health. So I think the approach is not, we're just going to let them do whatever they want, or we're just going to let the states regulate. There are some who've said, oh, Washington shouldn't even be in this game. I think that Secretary Clinton's approach is, we should have the right regulatory frameworks. We should think about how we use the Clean Air Act to address concerns about methane emissions, both in terms of their climate impacts, as well as their impacts on local air pollution, such as ozone. Think about ways in which we might use the Clean Water Act to address some of the water issues. But if we do that, we can develop a resource that is substantially cleaner and substantially better for the environment than coal. And to be honest, for all the rhetoric out there about regulations taking on coal and the sort of war on coal through the regulatory apparatus, it's amazing to me. It's capitalism at work here. It's the market. It's that innovators have lowered the cost dramatically of bringing natural gas out of the ground, and it is competing and beating coal. It's not because of regulation. It's because natural gas is cheap. Natural gas can go to power plants that are already built. And as a result, we, the American people, I think are benefiting from that.
So in the recent debate, Secretary Clinton spoke about how she plans to bolster and support former coal communities and coal miners. What do you think her plans are there?
I think what's important is to recognize that there are these communities, especially in Appalachia, where the community for a century or more has been built around the coal mining industry. And given the reduction in coal production we've seen in the U.S., what is likely to continue as we take on the challenge of climate change, there's this risk of these communities suffering high unemployment and having workers who knew how to do one thing. So she has pledged to invest $30 billion to revitalize these communities, to think about making investments in broadband, when we think about the opportunities through the internet to increase commerce, to make investments in training so that these workers can develop a richer set of skills that they can bring to new sources of employment. I think it's something that's actually much more substantial than what we've done in the past, which is say we're about to do an important policy, and whether it's true, whether on trade or on environment, like we'll have our job retraining program. And it ends up being pretty modest. It doesn't have much resources. It doesn't seem to have much of an effect. I think what Secretary Clinton has proposed is much more ambitious in scale. When we think about $30 billion of investment in a region and in people, that it really has the potential to transform Appalachia and enable them to transition. When we think about the clean energy transition, for them, it's an employment transition. And I think what she's proposed to do, if she can secure the kind of funding from Congress to make this happen, could be one of those things that really changes Appalachia for the better.
Joseph Aldi teaches public policy at Harvard University's Kennedy School. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Steve.
There's a longer version of this interview at our website, loe.org. There you'll also find links to Secretary Clinton's speech in Florida and her campaign website with details of her environment and energy plans.